The Manitoba Association of Christian Homeschools would like to thank the Learning House for sponsoring this recording.
This morning, Dr. Roger and his lovely wife, Jan, will be showing us how to foster an adventurous spirit in our homeschoolers. Dr. Roger and Jan Smith hail from Louisiana, where he is a medical doctor, and Jan manages their horse farm and businesses. All four of their adult children were homeschooled until the college years, and home education has been an exciting journey for them, where they became experts in home and family management, leadership, and community service. They continue to serve their church and community as mentors and teachers, as well as serving on the board of their state homeschool organization and the board of their National Alliance and Christian Homeschool Education Leaders. Please welcome Dr. Roger and Jan.
Well, it's good to see you all this morning. We know that the first morning session is usually a small crowd, but they are the eager beavers, and so we welcome you. And if you want to get together, great. If you want to stay spread out, that's fine. We're cool either way. But if you desire to relocate during our talk, then that doesn't bother us at all. So we're all family here. And so, yes, this morning the discussion of the topic is fostering an adventurous spirit in your children. And so, there are a lot of sayings that people have. There's things like, nothing ventured, nothing, okay, so that's common. Nothing ventured, nothing gained. It says, If at first you fail, try again. Well, we have another version of that. If at first you succeed, try something harder next time. And it's the whole mindset that failure is not final. Failure is where we learn and we grow and it stretches us. And it's that mindset of being adventurous and not being afraid that failure is going to define you. In fact, you know, there are... And I never know how widely known American athletes are, but Michael Jordan is one of our famous athletes, and he at one time was touted as the greatest basketball player of all time. But you know, it's very interesting that after the pinnacle of his success in the basketball world, he decided that he would try to play baseball. And so people began talking about the Michael Jordan mindset, and they would talk about how many shots he missed in his career, and how many potential game-winning shots that he did not make. And so they talked about his failures, but what began to define him is the fact that he seemed to have no fear of failure, and that he embraced the adventurous part of it, and that failure was not final. And so we want to foster that kind of mindset in our children as they embrace life, is that, you know, there's a time to play it safe. But like the original saying, nothing ventured, nothing gained. And so there is this mindset that we also want to foster of trying to break out of the norm to do something larger, to do something bigger, to have a greater influence in the world. And so the very fact that you are home educating says to a degree you yourselves are risk takers. And I commend you for that. And we want to foster an attitude or a mindset in our children that the common way, the easy way, is sometimes the right way. But we must consider that there may be a better way. And that's the risk-taking component to it, the adventurous mindset of saying, you know, the conventional wisdom may not be the best. So let's expand.
Moms, I think that this journey of allowing risk for your children starts the first time that you hand that baby to the dad. You're laughing because you know what I mean. It's a little scary because they handle that child differently than you do. And from the very beginning, it's our nature, maybe, to want to protect that child. And the father is more of a risk, you know, because they may throw him up in the air, and maybe not when they're an infant completely, but sooner than you would feel comfortable with it. They handle that baby differently. And it's important for us as moms to allow that child to be handled by the father in a way the father's comfortable, because it teaches children a different thing, that the world may not be safe, but dad's gonna take care of me. And there's so much that's happening, and we as mothers from the very beginning have to learn how to step back with our sons especially, but our daughters also, and allow them to experience things and to do things that make us a little bit uncomfortable because it involves a risk. Now, we're not in this session is not to say that we think you need to be reckless or to take unnecessary risk or to do things that are foolish. That is not what we're talking about. But something that might be reckless for me is not going to be reckless for my 8-year-old son. I'll never forget the first time that I really faced this in a significant way was when we were setting up for something in the gym and we were putting out chairs, and my son just took off and just jumped right over that chair. And I was incredulous. I would never think to just jump over a chair. But he did it no problem. Just, you know, and from the beginning to the end of raising boys, I had to just white knuckle it and let them do things that seemed crazy to me and yet were fun and exciting to them. Boys especially need adventure, and they're going to do things that are going to make you uncomfortable as a mom. And so we're going to talk about some of these things and some of the ways that we allow our children to be creative and to take risk and to be adventurous in ways that may make us a little uncomfortable. And yet we need to actually encourage that attitude and that conviction that you can do this. Go for it.
So just as a picture, many of you, in fact, probably most of you, have been to amusement parks or theme parks or the fair or different things. And boys tend to be drawn to different types of experiences. Well, children, but boys, they like a feeling that it's dangerous. All right? It's just natural. They want the roller coaster that you're feeling like you're going to fly out.
And then they raise their hands and let go. And we're like, seriously?
And some girls are programmed that way, but it tends to be that boys want to have those things that feel like they're at risk. And so it is something that we do not want to squelch that adventurous spirit that they're by nature have. And yet we, again, want to balance it with protection against risk. So sometimes it begins with even the way that the language that we use. On Tuesday mornings during the summer months, we have a swimming pool at our house, and Jan has an event called the Mom and Me Swim, where moms can bring their small children, and they swim. And the mothers have a chance to interact around the pool, and yet it's a safe environment for the children to swim. And quite often, Jan will notice that the mothers will cry out across the pool when a child is getting ready to jump in or something, "Be careful! Be careful!" And she often has to pull the mother aside and say, "You know, your little boy, he didn't want to be careful.
He wants to jump big. Let me see your best jump."
So even as simple as saying, "You're so brave when you jumped in," rather than "Be careful." And so we do want to train them to be wise, but we also want to train them to be big, to be bold, to be brave. "You are so courageous." And we have to train ourselves to use those types of that language that embodies, you know, the aggressive pursuit of life. And so moms especially want to be nurturers, protectors. And so think about, listen to yourselves. In my medical office, I have this nurse that is a very key employee to me. And she helps to order my day, take care of all of the details of my work, and she makes things happen. And she has a tendency to be a little negative. And so I have worked with her over the years on things that she would say to me. And her tendency is, in helping me be responsible, she'll say, "Don't forget to do this. Don't forget to do that." I go, "Mary, okay, I need you to say this differently, please." Says, "Say this in the positive. Please remember this." And that's very much more positive than "don't forget to." And so just like that, you can train yourself to use different words that communicate the same interest and care, but also in a positive belief that your children are up to the task that are before them.
We need to call out in our children those things that we desire, that we want to see. Like if you're on a walk and you're just out on a nature walk and you're trying to observe things and see things and do things, I know that our tendency is like that we want to stop them from doing things. That it's just what happens in us. And if you see your son that jumps up and then turns around to help his little sister up, instead of saying, we need to say, "What a big man you are. Look at you. You're going to be, when you're the daddy, I can see you're going to make such a good husband by learning to help your sister and by being careful with her. And you are so strong. Look at your muscles." And you can just see those boys puff up and get bigger right in front of your eyes because they're so brave and strong and helpful. And wow, I can't believe you jumped all the way up there. How did you reach that? And we want to call out courage and strength and honor in those children, in the small things that they're doing. If they jump down from a rock, instead of saying, "You can fall," to say, "Wow, look how strong you are. Look how big you jumped." And later, they're going to do bigger things. The little things become big things. And as you call out in them strength and manhood and honor, you know, it gets a little scarier the bigger they jump. When our son jumped off a cliff into the ocean and he showed me the video that someone took, I was pretty terrified. But I looked up and I said, "Wow, I can't believe you did that. You are so brave and strong." So that you've got to let them grow. You've got to encourage them, moms, and call out manhood with your little boys, with your medium boys, with your girls, that you see things in them that you want to foster and encourage. When they're helping you, I don't care if they cracked the egg and the shell got in there, to say, "Wow, you're going to make such a good mom one day when you are caring for your children." So when we want to say the negative, call out the positive. Acknowledge the work that they are doing when they're helping you.
Yeah, and so when we speak of being adventurous, it's not always about danger. Sometimes it is being willing to try a new recipe. That's adventurous. Trying to do something that they saw as interesting or curious. You know, the hardest part to starting a new journey, whatever it is the first step, getting started. And so that's where we have to inspire them and encourage them and use the positive language and see the good. And we love the language, the phrase that I got from a book called The 1 Minute Manager. And it's a little funny little story about the best manager in the world and habits that he had in managing his employees. And one of his rules was catch them doing something right. And so we, you know, even in the cracking the egg example, and the shell gets into the bowl with the and that they have to fish the eggshell out, is that we wouldn't focus on the eggshell that was there, but that they cracked it well, or that they did a good job of getting the eggshell out.
They threw it away into the trash or into the compost or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So we want to help you to find solutions when there's a problem, and to include your children in it. One of the things that I think of is when Roger was in medical training, we went to University of Kentucky. That was 14 hours away from our Louisiana home, and my family and my support, and I had a 2-month-old and a 2-year-old. And we moved to Kentucky, and lo and behold, the Lord provided a wonderful little playmate that was our backdoor neighbor. But there was a problem in accessing that child. There was a fence between, you know, just a cyclone fence, not but about this tall, but too tall for a 2-year-old to climb over, or a 3-year-old as he got bigger. And what Roger did was he built a little fence, a little bridge that went a ladder up one side and a little straight piece across, and then a ladder down on the other side, so that those little boys could come back and forth over that fence. There was an obstacle, and we found a solution by Roger building with scraps a little bridge. So later on, when our boys would encounter, we had 3 boys and a girl, and the boy, girl, and then 2 boys. And later on, as they would encounter an obstacle, that would pop into their head. Well, we need to be able to get from here to there. So we either put down a couple of trees to walk across this creek, or later, as we had bought our property and moved out to the countryside, we had this big creek, and there was no way to access the 200 acres of corn on the backside and all those turn rows that they could ride their horses and four quads on. And so they built a bridge that spanned the distance. It was a significant bridge that they used big building materials that a friend that we knew had worked for the highway department, and they were taking out some old bridges, and we used some of that old building material. And those guys, I mean, we got nails that were like this big that they would nail into the. With their dad's help, they figured it out. And then we had access to a whole new section of land to ride on and to build trails on. So things that you do when they're little affect their mindset when they're older and gives them the feeling that we can find a solution.
So one of the things in the language section of these ideas is that Jan's example, whenever they were little, I was blown away when she started doing this. I'm going, that was so insightful. She would say, she would talk to the little boy that was 3, 4, and 5 years old, and she would say, when you are the dad, and she would finish the sentence with such and such. And she says, when you're grown to be the man. And she began to help him to think in the future and help him picture his life as he went forward. And she would describe it and put words into his head. And you know, some of those things that she said didn't really materialize, but there were a lot of them that did. Because sometimes when you picture a possibility, you can pursue it to its fruition. And so it's helpful for us to build into our children's thinking possibilities rather than obstacles. You know, you can't do that because you're too little. We can focus on the obstacles. You can't do this because such and such. You're from the wrong family. Or we can focus on, well, you have these strengths, and it would be great if, and we think in possibilities. You know, and so
let me give you an example. When you're out hiking and you want to stay on the trail, you know, this is the path, this is the safe. And that little one that wants to go that direction, you know, I say a little one, maybe a 6-year-old, that says, oh, but look over here, and they're wanting to go and explore. Let your children sometimes go off the path. And if you have property, which a lot of you I've talked to have some land, let them build trails that are off the established path, because we allowed ours to do that. And as they were building trails here and there, they just would think how, you know, I would just say, let's just stay here. This feels good, you know. But they would want to get off and make new little side trails or go down the hill and back up the hill. And so that allowing them to know that it is possible to clear a new path in a direction enabled them that after we had built our house, we first built a driveway through 6 acres of woods across the front of our property. And later, after we had lived there for probably 15 years, then they, with their dad, got it in their mind that they were going to clear the woods for Mom and make it beautiful. And they started a project of clearing away all the underbrush. You couldn't see outside the driveway. There was maybe one mower width on either side that you could go through this little section of woods. And they began to go out from the edge and to clear all the underbrush, leaving the big trees. And this became their college years project, that they cleared the woods. And it was a pretty massive project, but they did it. And they would come home on the holidays and they would have their machetes and hatchets and, you know, saws, and they would cut all this stuff. I have these beautiful fairyland woods now that you can walk through and the grandchildren can play in, that's very close and accessible to the house. You can still look back and see the house, but these woods are accessible because of allowing that child to get off the trail and realize, oh, we could clear this and it makes a path. So they begin to think, we could clear these woods for Mom. And it's one of the greatest gifts they've ever given me, so, is the years they spent clearing the woods.
In that example, we're kind of getting our talk out of order, but that's okay. One of the things in this example of them clearing the woods or any little project, we tried not to give them strict instructions of how to get it done, because one thing that was of value to us was creativity. And sometimes they come up with a better solution than we do, how to get something done. We can say, this is what we want to accomplish. How would you go about it? Like in the clearing of the woods, they did it vastly different than I would approach it. In fact, I stood there watching them doing it, and I was going to go, how do you think of that? And your children have within them the capacity to analyze a situation and come up with a solution that is sometimes better than your own. And yet, you know, we were there to guide and to instruct, and certainly to teach them how to use tools. But you're going to find as your children go forward that they're going to outgrow you. And that's good. And so they went about this particular project in a different way than I would have, that in many ways was more efficient and a little bit less careful.
Yes, like, you know, they had the tractor and they had the chains and they had machetes and things. But as they would make a big pile and wrap the chain around it to drag to the back burn pile, because we weren't going to burn in the woods, then there might be two guys balanced on the top of it, sledding it, you know, as it goes by. And I'm like, oh, they're going to fall. It's going to, again, let them have fun while they're doing things, because what they think is fun is probably a little bit dangerous. Yeah. So let them have their elements of fun as they do projects. And, you know, that child, that young one that was always just pushing the envelope. I remember one time I got a phone call when we lived in town. We lived like right in the middle of town. And just, it was really nice because we were half a block from Roger's medical office at that time. And so we had easy access during the day. And so sometimes we would walk down there, and his office was on the little main street of a picture, a town of about 3,000 to 5,000 people. Okay, so it had that one little main street, and but there were shops up and down the street. And our child at this time was about 2.5. And one time I got a call from the insurance agency that was on that main street, and they said, "Don't worry, we have Rodney." And I'm like, "Oh my goodness." I said, "How long has he been there?" "He just showed up, and he had his wagon and his dog, and he had his daddy's boots and a diaper." And he had managed to walk down the street. Now, granted, this didn't take long because we weren't far from there, but it was embarrassing. And she said, "He's fine. He's sitting here eating a candy bar." And I thought, "And he'll be back tomorrow." And I remember making the statement that, oh my goodness, one day this kid's going to bike across France. You know, and that statement kind of lodged in the back of my children's mind. The older kids, they thought that sounded really fun. And do you know that when our daughter, through a series of events, you know, she did some international travel to in England with her college, you know, how you do an abroad semester. She did that and ended up going to Florence, and she saw these beautiful journals that she wanted to make. And because she's a writer, and she just had that in her mind that one day she would love to go back to Florence and intern with this company that made and sold these gorgeous journals, these leather-bound journals with very nice paper. So she found a way through a company called Woofing. Have you ever heard of Woofing? Worldwide Opportunities in Organic Farming. Well, I had certainly never heard of that either, but she had, you know, this young yuppie generation in their 20s that travel the world, and they go and they work on one of these farms for board and for food, and they work for 4 to 6 hours a day. Well, she was going to go do this and learn Italian, because you had to speak Italian to intern with this company that made these journals. And she had already started her journal, making journals and learning about it. And so we were a little nervous about that, and we decided that maybe her big brother should go with her. Actually, it was Roger's idea that they take a
transatlantic cruise, what they call a repositioning cruise. They're trying to move their cruise ships from the Gulf of Mexico, which is, you know, the Caribbean, that in certain seasons of the year, they move some of their ships over to the Mediterranean. It takes them a couple weeks to get the ship over there, and they try to sell very cheap cruise tickets. They're one way. And so I said, "I've heard that those are pretty cheap, and it's going the direction you want to go at the time of year." So
Emily was taking bags of leather, and she was planning to go and stay for a while.
So she was planning to be there for a year or more. So she was really moving. She wasn't just going for a holiday. And so I said, "You know, you should probably check into this cruise transportation. You're not in a hurry to get there." I mean, and so she called back and said, "You were right, Dad. It was half the price of an airline ticket." I said, "You know, cruises usually sell by the room, not by the person." I said, "You better call back and see if you had to buy two tickets." She did. She found out she had to buy two tickets. But before she called me back to tell me that she was going to have to buy two tickets, she called her brother. He says, "I've got to buy two tickets. Would you go with me?" And so we felt better about that because he was her protector. She was going to an uncertain situation where there was unknown risk to us. And we are about risk management. Adventure, but risk management. And so while they were there, you know, there's a long ordeal and tale. There are many, many interesting stories in it. But one of the things that they did do is they had a time period where there was not any work to do. And they said, "We're bored. Let's do something adventurous." So they bought bicycles and they biked across France. So the very thing that she said, just as an aside, one day you'll probably be one who bikes across France. Well, they did. Somehow the words that you say to your children that are possibilities become realities in their lives. And we want to speak not in limitations, but in possibilities. You know, I wonder about Elon Musk, what his mother said to him when he was a child. Because he's done some things that are really unbelievable. You know, I would have in my instinct say, good idea, but that's not possible. But somehow he thought in possibilities, and he's done some things that the rest of the world has said, can't do that. So I forgot what point we were trying to make there.
So we're wanting solution seeking kids, and yeah. So therefore you've got to start small,
yeah,
in small things, because we had ridden bikes in town, right, and that was a risk itself. Well, we lived in town, you know, at the end of the day, I'm an outside person. And I would want to get outside, and that meant not that I couldn't just take my bike and go riding. I had to take these kids with me. You know, I had to do something with the children. And so they each had their bike and their helmet, and one would be on the back of me, and it was like a mother duckling with her little ducks behind us. And people in town were used to seeing us in the little neighborhood and around, and we began to do more and more things as a family on bicycles. And did that have some danger? Yeah. But then also, was a calculated risk.
Yeah. So you get hurt along the way, but none of them are fatal, we hope. I mean, and there are things that families do and someone does get fatally injured. You know, we're not talking about those things. Usually it's the little things that really help us to foster an adventurous spirit. So we were at the Huebners a day or two before the conference started, and they were talking about whenever their children were small, what their Saturdays looked like. And it looked like gathering firewood in the little trails behind their house. And it was very interesting that children come up with ideas of how to either do the work or how to get out of the work. And even that is an adventurous spirit. And so Diane, their daughter, did not like doing the trail work. And so she was creative and adventurous enough to offer to go in and cook for the meal, because though she didn't really care to cook, she preferred it over the other. And even in the creative solutions, she was finding a solution to her situation that put her in a better spot for her. So even those things are an adventurous mindset. They're a solution-seeking mindset, and we should value those and encourage that, a solution-seeking mindset. And so there, you know, we've talked about the building of the trails and the building of the bridges, and one thing that our daughter, who was very fashion-minded, she did not like flowers on her clothes. You know, patterns that were very flowery. And during the time that she was growing up, that was the prominent print. So she then said to her mother, I don't want to wear that. Can we make something? And she described it. Even asking the question is a solution-seeking mindset, and we should encourage that. And sometimes it's, no, I don't know how to do that. Or maybe it's, I don't know. Let's investigate. Can we find someone who can help us with that? And so it is seeking solutions to their situation, and that is adventurous. And that was adventurous in her clothing choices. So then they...
It forced me to do some things with her that I probably would not have done otherwise. And not only did she want to make her own clothes, but she had a certain style in mind that she wanted to do. And so it meant adapting the patterns that were on the market at the time. And it was a whole lot more trouble for me to help supervise her making her dresses for the summer than it was for me to just say, no, this is what's available. Pick out which one's your favorite. We're buying this. Instead, I let her make her summer wardrobe, and God provides, But ladies, you're growing with your children. Not just are they growing, but you're growing. Now, I knew how to sew, but I'm not bent the direction that I start off to create my own dress. I could create something, but she would want to change the shoulder or change something about the pattern, and I would say, go for it, it's your dress. And she experimented, and she played with it, and she made it fit the way she wanted to fit. We found the colors that she wanted and the textures she wanted. And now I look back and realize that God was growing her confidence level to cut out fabric that was, you know, an eighth of the cost of cutting into a piece of leather for a new design that she's creating. And that's what makes her things that she's creating now in her business so unique and something you can't just pull off the rack, off a rack in a store, that it's a more of a couture look. And so that didn't just happen that she was able to do that. That started when she was 8 and said, can we cut off my blue jeans and add layers of horse fabric that have prints of horses on them? And saying, well, we can sure try it. These jeans are about worn out anyway. We can cut them off.
So the risk of damage to the current garment was low. It was at the end of its life. So the risk was manageable. So if it was a mistake and it didn't work out, throw it away. So there are situations where you go, it's worth a try. And that's an adventurous spirit.
So did you hear that? 8 years old? So whatever God is doing in your children right now, listen to it. They were created before inception in the heart and mind of the Creator God that you serve. And He is calling them to a purpose beyond what you know now. Our job is to work with Him to allow this child to grow and flourish and to become who God is calling them to be. And so your job is to take risks now with them that allow them to have enough of an adventurous spirit to become who it is that God is calling them to do. Our son that was the child that was always pushing the envelope, in his job where he's at now, he created his position, his sales position that he's in, because he could sell things. But remember, he has that visual discrepancy problem in his brain that causes a lot of numbers and facts and figures on a page to get scrambled. So he's learned to remember most of what he has to remember. And he could open the doors in this company that he was working for. He could make the calls and initiate the initial contact with a company. But he was having trouble managing on the back end all the details and the actual structure of the final sale. And he was talking to some of his workers that did the same job that he did and found out that some of the people that were doing the same job had the same reaction to the front end of making those initial calls, that it was hard for them to do the cold calls. And he thought that was easy, but they loved doing the backside. So he found the person that was most successful in closing the deals, and he partnered with them and talked to his company. He partnered with the closer, and he would be the opener, and he proposed to his company that he was working for and said, can we work together, and I do the open, and she does the closing, and that anything that gets sold between the two of us, we split the commission on. And they were willing to take a risk on that.
So does that sound like a solution-seeking mindset?
The first year that they did that, they tripled the sales of any other individual person. And the company said, oh, this works. You can do this again. And they gave them full commission, both of them, on the sales. They worked it out financially, even though it hadn't been being done that way. They realized that when they were operating in their strengths, that they were more successful. That's the kind of thing that we're talking about, of helping your children identify what they're good at and doing those things. And along the way, they're watching you. They're watching you. They're learning from you. One of the things that we did were we coordinated tournaments. And our children were a part of that, just like those of you who are volunteering for this conference. Some of you were children that helped with it when you were kids. You know, you involve our kids because as homeschoolers, they do kind of what we're doing. They help. One of the things that I did during the years that our son Rodney was in high school is that in putting on a tournament that was a speech and debate tournament, we had to recruit judges. And I would be on the phone talking to people in a town an hour or maybe 3 hours away that I had never met before. But I was calling these people and talking to them, and I would keep a page and make notes. And so from year to year when I would call, if last year this person couldn't judge because, say, their mother had a stroke and was in the hospital or something, the next year when I called that same person, I would look at my notes and I'd say, tell me about your mom. You know, last year she was really sick. How is she doing? And we would talk, and sometimes I would pray for her or different things that would occur on that phone. And I remember one day my son Rodney asking me when he came in there and he knocked in between phone calls. He said, how long have you known that person that I had just prayed for? And I said, oh, I've never met her. She just helps judge at this tournament. And he said, well, how did you know about her mama being sick? And I said, well, last year she, you know, and I explained. I never realized, moms, that I was teaching him the most valuable skill that he would use in his career, making cold calls, making a personal connection with somebody they'd never met before, and treating them like an old friend. I thought that I was taking time away from what we were supposed to be doing, but I was creating an opportunity for them to do speech and debate because somebody has to be in leadership, right? Nothing happens without somebody creating and leading in that opportunity. And yet the very thing that I thought was a distraction from what we were doing was the most valuable teaching lesson that I could have given him for his career because he also has that skill. And he learned it from me, listening to me make cold calls. So solution-seeking mindset for your children starts when they're little.
Oh, you carry on. I need a drink of water.
Okay.
Thanks.
All right. Take them to conferences like this or to other conferences. You've heard us, if you've been in our session yesterday, you heard that with our oldest son, he went to several types of conferences. He was he was very analytical, our oldest son. He was very smart. He could process things well. And he was able to do some computer learning when computers first came out. We had a neighbor that moved in that had been working as a computer programmer for the headquarters of Walmart in Arkansas. I know, Walmart's from Arkansas. And they moved from Arkansas to our little town because we have an LSU experiment station. And so this highly educated couple moved to our little town, and she had not gotten a job yet. And she came over when I just met her, and I said, well, hey, can you come over and teach my kids? We just got a computer for the first time. And she would come over once or twice a week and do computers with our oldest two children. And that oldest child, he just caught on and did things. So a couple of years later, when Roger had someone from his office going to learn the new program, Excel, then we sent our son, Caleb, who was in the eighth grade at that time. We got a computer when he was in the sixth grade. So by the eighth grade, Roger said, he needs to learn this program. And so he went with an adult to an adult workshop on Excel, and he was learning right along with them. And then later we took him to the John Maxwell Conference on the recommendation of some of his leaders that said, hey, this kid's a leader. I would take him to this conference. And we invested in our whole family going to this conference, at least the oldest ones at that time, went to this conference with us. And they were the only children there. They were teenagers, you know, but they were the only ones there. But they were learning and growing, and it just really lit a fire. Your kids, bring them to your conferences. Help them to learn what you're learning and grow in ways that you're growing. And so that you know, then he was so interested in computers that one of the men that taught at the community college before ours could go, were old enough to go to the community college, I talked to him about doing a computer class with my oldest two children. Now, I didn't know hardly anything about computers because we didn't grow up with computers. We've been learning. Roger learned a lot right off the bat.
So I want to cut to the chase on this and tell you what it looked like. He just wasn't in attendance. We'll start with the Maxwell Leadership Conference. They had a book fair just like it was right out there. And we had been learning together as a family, and he was very familiar with books because we're a books family. I mean, that's the way we learn and change. And so we would go to the vendor hall and between sessions, and I would watch him. And it still blows me away to this day. He was 15, and he would be looking at the books, and someone else would come up, a businessman would come up, and he would be perusing the table. And Caleb would say, "Have you read that one?" And he would start, you would think that he was the salesman of the thing because he was sharing his learning with the next guy. And he was encouraging them, the older men, people two and three times his age, to grow, and that's really a good one. And so, and I found that other people learned from him, were encouraged by him to continue their personal growth. And then we ventured into the real estate market because I wanted them to learn real estate skills. And two, I also thought our son needed a passive income model because of what he wanted to do with his life. And so we went to some real estate investment seminars where we were there with the international guru of real estate. He was the only kid there. And what happened was when we had the chance to interact with this famous person, He was free to ask questions that all the rest of us were embarrassed to ask. He asked just simple things. How do you manage your email? What about your contacts? What do you use for this? And all the people would gather around and listen to his questions and write down the answers because he didn't feel embarrassed about his simple questions. And we just created a free learning, free interaction type of mindset. And also people were unafraid to talk to our son. When he asked a question, they were experts in that area. They freely educated our son about things that we did not know anything about. And so opportunities for your children are found in the adult world. And take them there before they're an adult. So there are opportunities. It may be taking your son or your daughter on an expedition of some sort. Maybe it's a fishing trip. And maybe it's a one afternoon fishing trip with your buddies. And that it's a okay situation, you know. It's not something you're going to be exposed to things you do not want them to know about. But you want them to be exposed to people that are professionals in their realm. And Carlos and Angela, what's their last name? Weeb. We toured their manufacturing plant. And so their children have the opportunity to grow from their employees because their employees are very specialized in their machine work, and so they can see what they do and interact with people that can share their professional knowledge. There are situations in your current world that you're operating in that your children can benefit from the professional knowledge of your associates and your friends. And so maybe it's not work type of information, but maybe it's life information, how they manage their relationships with their neighbors. And
I want to piggyback on what he said about Caleb going to that real estate investment training because it was just an option that Roger was considering buying a few rental properties so that he could teach the boys how to do basic electrical, basic plumbing, basic, you know, all of the laying floor and exchanging out a light fixture or a fan and electrical outlets. And all of our boys learned to do all of those things. And they all now are homeowners, and our daughter learned as well, because it was an adventurous thing. To do that for a boy, that's adventurous, to take them in and say, okay, this is the floor, and I want you to let's figure out how we're going to lay this tile and how you're going to approach it, where you're going to start, and making those calculations and doing those figures that find ways, create ways for your kids to have real work learning opportunities. And so what does that look like as a 38-year-old? So he now has three houses in Austin, Texas. And Austin, Texas is the most expensive real estate outside of New York and California and San Francisco. That Austin, Texas, the values there are 2 and 3 times anywhere else in the United States. And the way he did that is that he had bought right out of college, when he had his first job in a neighboring city, he bought a little triplex. And he lived in one, and the other two people paid the note. And he kept that long enough to where he had enough equity in it that when it sold and he was married and living in Austin, Texas, that he then bought, they had already bought a home, he and his wife, and he used the equity in that first purchase to put down on two other houses. So now they have two rental properties that pay their house note in their own house that they live in. And so we didn't know what that was going to look like, you know. He's not a real estate magnate. He's not super wealthy, but he's a successful, profitable young man providing for his three little boys and his wife to be able to stay at home and work without having to work. So God takes what you're doing as you journey along, if you take your children with you, and they take little risk and they make bigger and bigger risk. And some of the adventures that you go on when you're walking out on the trail with your kids, or when you just take them on a vacation with you, anything that you can find to expand their world, to make them bigger people, even though there's some risk, to keep from coddling them and keeping them safe, but to encourage them and to let them go out, but to come back in, that you're always within reach. And they're saying, watch me, Mama, when I jump from this rock or when I swing out on this rope into the water. That whatever it is that they're doing, when they can do that safely with you watching and encouraging and cheerleading for them, they're going to be much more likely to take risk and have adventures that are the kinds of things we call success in life, if they've had that opportunity under your tutelage when they're young.
So one of the vacations that we had with some other families, we went to the beach. And we were, all the dads were young dads, young men, and we were still, you know, wanted to show our vigor. And one of the guys brought a surfboard, a windsurfing setup. None of us had ever done that, but we thought, we can do this. And so we were all trying to manage getting up on the surfboard and holding the sail and catching some wind and moving through the water. And it was harder than it looked. It looked like, man, this is going to be fun. It's going to be a breeze. And we never really, I don't think we moved a foot. But our son that was 12 wanted to try it. And he showed us that, you know, it was safe. Well, hey, what's going to happen if you fall off a surfboard? Make a splash. Who gets hurt? Well, you could fall on the thing and you could injure yourself and get bruised or something, but so what? So that was a picture of safe failing. And he was determined that he was going to show us men folk that he was a man. And that's what your children want to do too. They want to show you that they're big. and we need to let them be big in safe ways, adventurous ways. But it's an ever reminder to us that our children want to follow what you're doing. So you be a little adventurous, and you're modeling for them that it's a good thing to do something hard and to do something you're a little uncomfortable with, to try a new way that you're not sure is going to work, but it's worth a try.
I talked to yesterday, as some of you may have heard the story about our son that was allowed to get fired because he didn't mow the yard in a weekly fashion. We had, at that time, we had bought a laundromat in town in our little community, and he was about 15 or 16, and he had the responsibility of mowing that yard, and he got the yard next to it. The dentist office next to it said, well, while you're mowing, go ahead and mow these few strips, and I'll give you $20. So anyway, he did that mowing, and he did not do it timely enough, and the guy kept saying, I'd like it mowed every week, and when he did not mow it consistently every week, he got fired from having that job. So
well, to our friend that he was bold enough to fire our son.
And so, but he learned from that, and he became more and more responsible. And at that time, we had expanded our operation. You know, if it worked well here, then we'll do it over here. And we bought another laundromat and several other rental properties near that laundromat. And sometimes when those properties would be vacant, they had to still be mowed. And so that son that was 16, one of his most vivid memories, he remembers being allowed to load our big mower onto a trailer after hooking it up to the truck, to drive it all the way, the 45 minutes to an hour, to the neighboring city and mow those yards, reload the mower after each yard, and drive it back home. And now he says, you don't know what an impact that made on me as a young man, that I was entrusted with a $10,000 mower and a trailer and a truck to load up and move that over there and to do that and come home by myself. Now, he had done those activities with us many times together, but on that particular day, we could not go and it needed to be done. And Roger said, son, I want you to go and do that. And he did that. And it gave him the confidence to do things that were bigger than what we thought. Right now, as an electrical engineer in the city of Houston, Houston is building a new water plant. And guess who's doing the connections of the computer programming for that new water plant in the city of Houston? And the city of Dallas, because his company does water plants, and he's learned how to do that. So now he's doing big things that take a courageous spirit to be willing to take responsibility. And so know that the little things that you're doing with your children, they build. And the more you do for them that they can do for themselves, the more you're limiting their capacity to grow and to seek adventure and to do what God is calling them to do, because you can actually be the hindrance in their life. And we want to take those stand. In Joshua, it says, Joshua 1:9 says, be strong and courageous. And that's what we want for our children. He says, because I'm going to be with you. And then again in Isaiah 41:10.
Do not fear, for I am with you.
Do not anxiously look about you.
For I am your God. I will uphold you.
I will strengthen you.
I will uphold you with my righteous right hand. And we do have one who holds us up. And thinking in the realm of possibility sometimes is a life of faith. We're not assuming on God's goodness and his benevolence, but we are trusting that he has equipped you for such a time as this in your parenting. And you may look at our children in the finished product and go, that's impossible for our family. We would have said the same thing, because all we could see was them learning to tie their shoes and make clothing choices. It starts with the small things. So the small things that you're facing today, lead to bigger things. But they're important today. And that an adventurous spirit begins with the mindset, the language, and just some simple habits. Are you willing to try something new? And you can inspire your children and enable your children to take bold steps that to you look small, but to them, the first time they do it, it's pretty scary. And you can give them strength and courage to be adventurous in life. And so we do want to model it for them and use the language for it. And sometimes hold back our words of caution. You know, we want to guide them, but we don't want to overprotect. So sometimes we have to be like the eagle and push the baby out of the nest. And know that whenever they're tumbling and they hadn't quite figured out how to stretch out their wings, that the mother eagle swoops down and catches them on her back and carries them back up to the nest and pushes them out again. And so it's a scary thing.
You're making a good start.
Nothing ventured, nothing gained. So have an adventurous spirit and enjoy the journey. It is a journey.
Blessings.
We hope you enjoyed this recording, which was sponsored by The Learning House. For more information on The Learning House, you can visit their website at learninghouse.ca.